All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, talking to you from the borough of Queens, New York City, on March 8th, 2022. Before I talk more about today's show, I want to encourage you to attend the Metals Investor Forum in person at the Georgia Hotel in downtown Vancouver. That starts this Thursday, March 10th and 11th. If you can't make the show in person, I understand that it will be available on the internet. So all you have to do is to go to my website at jtaylormedia.com and click the Metals Investor Forum near the top at the upper right-hand corner on the homepage and provide some information. I think they want your email and your name and maybe your address as well. Simply check off the box that you're going to do it. You're going to do it virtually if you can't make it in person, and then you'll be able to see this event live. And it does start at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning and Friday morning as well. And I will be speaking at 3 o'clock. Actually, I'll be speaking, yes, at 3 o'clock Pacific time. That's 6 o'clock Eastern time. The title of my talk will be, Can the Fed Outrun Debt Deflation Without Destroying the Dollar? The companies that I have invited are Klondike Gold, Snowline Gold Corp, Goliath Resources Limited, and El Oro Resources. And I want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to invite you to keep your questions, comments coming to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number four, taylor@gmail.com. We do, of course, want to thank our sponsors for making the show economically viable. Sponsors for today's show, Irving Resources, Novo Resources, El Oro Resources, Hannon Metals, Firefox Gold, Timberline Resources, Lion One Metals, and SK Mining. Title of today's show is, How Does Ukraine Fit Into the Global Jigsaw? Alistair McLeod, Eric Coffin, and Chen Lin are with me for today's show. The title of this show was based on Alistair's February 24th article titled, How Does the Ukraine Fit Into the Global Jigsaw? The article was written about the time that Russia just began invading the Ukraine. Since then, it appears that the NATO countries have been more unified than anticipated, and the Ukrainian army and citizens are putting up a very courageous fight against the invaders that may be countering attempts by Mr. Putin to drive a wedge between America and the non-Anglo-Saxon EU. But can this unity last when the economic repercussions of sanctions and broken supply chains start to cause serious hardships for all of Europe? In his January 24th article, Alistair suggested that the U.S. was actually trying to suck Russia into an untenable occupation that Putin would not fall for. Well, in fact, contrary to Alistair's views on February 24th, and those of most people, including the Ukrainian president himself, President Putin not only invaded the Ukraine, but failing to successfully hit military targets, he has begun a bloody carpet bombing campaign in major cities. With Putin getting sucked into this conflict, how does that change Alistair's views of how the Ukraine fits into the global geopolitical puzzle? And what will it mean for global markets and the economies of the NATO countries? Those and many more questions are what we'll try to get answers from Alistair on. He'll be with me in the second half of today's show. Eric Coffin will join me in the second segment to talk about the March 10th and 11th Metals Investor Forum and hopefully give us an idea or two, an investment idea or two that he is excited about. But right now, I'm excited to tell you that Chen Lin is with me. Thanks for joining me, Chen. It's good to have you, especially at a time like this when there's so much going on. Give me your thoughts about the events in the Ukraine and maybe anything else you might want to talk about that you think might be impacted by all that's going on now.
I invest in Ukrainian company, right? So I have, I know people there, and I have friends who has a, in New Jersey who has a parent in living in Kiev, and terrible. I was trying to help. I don't think I can. The company, the Cap Energy, very graciously was able to secure a train ticket for them, but they were not able to because the train was so too packed. And very hard for handicapped people to get on there.
Sure.
But anyway, but it's terrible. I mean, from there I learned how difficult life is. I mean, I hope this war will be over soon. I really a prayer to the courageous Ukraine people there.
Absolutely.
So, and I just want to comment. We mentioned a little bit that with Ukraine impact to the world commodity. We noticed the nickel tripled this week, right? Tripled. The LME actually stopped trading nickel because 10% of worldwide production is from Russia. And then those Russian nickel cannot be delivered as, you know, LME nickel, you know, quote unquote. So that's created a huge short squeeze. So I look around and I think, wow, you know, Russia also produced 40% palladium and 10% platinum. So for my trade is I added to my, you know, already existing platinum and palladium futures and ETF. Right? So if there's a squeeze, I don't know, there will be, but if there's a squeeze, that will be a very, very good, you know, you know, profitable trade. But if not, even not, look, today's announcement from Spanish Steelwater is the South Africa Union, the military union, going to strike against their gold operation. Actually, Spanish Steelwater is down due to that. What that means is they probably will strike against the platinum mines later this week. Not just Spanish Steelwater, but for all the South African platinum because the contract due for negotiation this year. So think about it. Between Russia and South Africa, that's almost 80-90% of worldwide PGM production. Okay. So I think the 2022, this year, it belongs to PGM. So we get just so many incidents waiting to happen because the most are coming from Russia and South Africa. Right? So anyway, I'm very bullish on those, and I'm looking forward, you know, to see what's going to happen. I think if it happens, it will be very quickly in the next couple of weeks.
I hope so.
Last week, and I said in my newsletter, I was buying Kinross, which was hit very hard by the Russia. Kinross has like 15-20% gold production from Russia. They also hit very hard by the fire in Africa Mill, and then their purchase of Great Bear, which is terrible. You know, they used some of the share. So they hit three times. So as of last week, Kinross valuation is less than half of others, like Goldfield. Not even Barrick or Newman. So it's so cheap, it's probably can be a good takeover target. So we start buying last week, and so far so good. Today is Kinross far outperformed GDX, which is down today. It's a big reversal today, you know. I think it's like a shooting star pattern, right? The gold goes up, 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 and then there's some talk like Ukraine may have peace. I don't know. I really don't know. I doubt until Russia achieve its objective, Ukraine can get you know, I do not know. We'll see. So, and then they're just market was just too oversold, you know, short covering, and then boom, we go, and then gold went down. We have, I think so far, gold is holding on quite well. So, I think we're in the bull market of gold, and then clearly gold is gaining against all the other currencies, including Bitcoin, which has been. People talk about this more digital gold, but it's not, right? So gold is the gold. Gold is real gold. So I'm very glad that it's there. So I think gold has much more to run here.
Yeah. Certainly, you know, the dollar has been stronger as well, along with gold. So the whole idea that gold and the dollar, you know, move in opposite directions is not always true. But your point is well taken. It's gold has done even better against other currencies than Just with a couple of minutes left, Chen, you want to mention anything about a couple of your biotech favorites?
Right, yeah, we can mention the Tricida. Unfortunately, they have 15% of their trial in Ukraine. So their trial results are going to be delayed by a couple of months, according to my calculation. Their statement said they're going to delay by by a quarter. Okay, so that's understandable because 15%, those you cannot count. You have to use other places to trigger the outcome, right? So the trial will be 15% slower from now on until they finish, which is the Q3. So, and Amaris had just have another presentation yesterday. It was very, very good. I hope people will listen to the replay. Finally, the management is trying to downplay the expectation. They're trying to lower expectation but beat it. And then they are mentioning that one of their brand, JVM, is growing at 1,000% a year. So it's just unbelievable. And then they also have a lot of technology for high oil price, which they used to produce. Now it's coming back because all these energy companies coming asking them to create those synthetic oils because oil price so high. So they have a lot of opportunity out there. So not just what they're doing, but other open up other opportunities at this high oil price. But those are not pricing this current stock price. So it's in the management, they said in the year they see four brands, each brand worth at least $1 billion. Their market cap is a little over $1 billion. You know what I'm saying? So it's just so cheap, it's not funny. So if you have a long-term vision, I suggest going to hold on to this.
So, Chen, let me get this straight. So synthetic oils, possibly, that because of the high natural oil price, there may be some possibility of synthetic oils?
Synthetic diesel, synthetic, you know, those kind of things. Synthetic energy product, okay? They used to create it, and then oil crash, and then they don't do it anymore. Now, the Shell, all these, they mentioned Shell, all these big oil companies are looking to do it again at this oil price. But for Amaris, they said, okay, we don't want to put any capital. If you want it, we can more than happy to, you know. He didn't say exactly word, but it just gave license your technology, want to make extra money out of you, and we can enable you, right? So they are not going to spend any more capital on those.
Well, of course, one thing about Amaris is it's not only a research and development company, it is also a manufacturing. It is a manufacturing facilities now, too, right? It's the only one that's sort of the leading edge synthetic chemistry that also is a manufacturing, at least on scale.
Right. They are selling directly to consumer. They're doing extremely well in the United States. They're expanding to Europe. They want to expand to China. They seem to be doing, you know, there are a lot of technologies coming. Okay, so for example, the rubber, right? The rubber, Michelin have a very, very strong rubber, but the synthetic rubber is not as strong, but they can enable that. That's another angle they can do that. So there's so many things, it's almost endless.
Yeah, it is. It is really an exciting story, no doubt about it. And I guess that conference call is on their website, Chen? People can go to Amaris' website?
This week, they should have a replay, yes.
Okay, all right, great. All right, well, we have to leave it go with that, Chen. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us, and we'll look to do it again sometime soon. Well, folks, don't go away. We do have to go to break now, but Eric Coffin is coming back. He'll be with us when we come back, I should say. He's going to talk about the Metals Investor Forum, I expect, and maybe an exciting stock pick or two from Eric. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQX, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have with me once again Eric Coffin. He is the editor of HRA, Hard Rock Analyst. It's a family of newsletter publications, and you can learn more about his service and sign up for his letter by going to HRAAdvisory.com, HRAAdvisory.com. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thanks for having me again, Jay.
Yeah, it's good to have you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in the flesh here in a couple of days, or the Metals Investor Forum. Now, I wonder, maybe just because you really have a lot of good insights about the money markets, the markets in general, but what are your thoughts real quickly? Here we had already the Fed seemed to be trapped in a corner, sort of in a trap. It couldn't raise rates very much or the markets would tank, and it could not raise rates because of the inflation problem. So now you add a war in the mix, and just like to get your quick thoughts. Spend a minute or two, perhaps, and tell us what your thoughts are.
If anything, the Fed is more trapped now. I think we all know that food and energy are the really the largest components of the of the inflation reading, and obviously with what's happened with the oil price and what's happened with wheat and some other grain prices, I don't see how. And I was a guy that was sort of, inflation's at least half transitory a few months ago. Uh-huh. Kind of out the window now. I'll be surprised if inflation doesn't tick up at least a couple more percent. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping food prices don't do what they do internationally, because if they do, it's going to be really bad in some of the developing countries, and we could see a repeat of the Arab Spring. But locally, the Fed's stuck, because the simple truth is, if inflation ticks up a couple more points, that just means the average consumer, in the States, and it's the same in Canada, will be falling farther and farther behind, because they're not getting wage increases that match inflation. The Fed has to try to fix that. But to me, it feels more and more like the simple massive increase in volatility and uncertainty, the odds of the North American economy rolling over later this year, they're getting higher by the day. Uh-huh. And as we all know, when you've got a central bank tightening, and I do think they're still going to tighten next week, and it'll be 25 points, I think they're going to try to tighten more, because they're trying to close that gap, trying to push inflation over the top. But the problem is, when you're a central bank tightening into a decelerating economy, the odds of a policy mistake basically go up by an order of magnitude. And by policy mistake, I mean the one rate too many that rolls the economy over and starts a recession. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to figure the odds of a recession later this year are now at least 50-50. And I don't think they were anywhere near that 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, very interesting. Certainly you'll be talking more about these issues when you give your talk. And I guess that's going to be on Thursday, and you're talking, right before I am. I think it's the block before me. What is it?
Right after lunch. Yeah, right after lunch. Thursday and Friday. One thing I would tell people is if you go to metalsinvestorforum.com, we haven't been advertising the fact, but because it was a bit up in the air as to just how much opening would be done by now with the COVID and everything, if you go, and even if you're not going to Vancouver this week, if you go and register for MIF, once you've registered, it will ask you whether you want to register in person or online. So we will actually be live streaming this one. We just haven't advertised the fact we're going to be doing that. So even if you're out of town, you can still watch Jay in all his glory wherever you happen to be sitting.
Yeah, right. My glory. Well, I don't know anybody's glory. Your glory, maybe. Eric, I would much rather be sitting back there listening to you than being upstage talking, that's for sure. But in any event, Chen was talking about nickel a little bit ago. I mean, and some of those markets. What are your thoughts? I mean, this war, who knows how this is going to shake out? I mean, David Stockman was talking on my show the other day about, last week, in fact, he was talking about how a lot of goods from China go by rail over through Russia, through the Ukraine, into Europe, and none of that is going there. That everybody's trying to get it on ships or on airplanes. And the cost of shipping is going up dramatically. I mean, everything is just a mess, it seems. But
yeah,
what are your thoughts?
It's just, the supply chain issues that look like they were starting to slacken have just become a complete shit show again.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to end anytime soon. I mean, even if there's a resolution, whatever that would be, in the next week or two in Ukraine, and I seriously doubt that there would be. The only resolution I could see near term would, unfortunately, be Russia bombing it into oblivion. But, the Rubicon has been crossed now for Russia. I mean, they are now a pariah state. They're like Venezuela squared, and that doesn't go away very fast. So
yes,
this is going to have a lot of ramifications. Some of the output, I mean, their nickel output, Norilsk, at least right now, is not actually sanctioned. But what you are seeing is there's so much pressure on governments and on companies from consumers and buyers of the Western companies' products saying, don't you dare source anything in Russia, that I think you're going to see a drop-off in supply. Even if they're not sanctioned, they're being sort of self-sanctioned. So, yeah, do I think nickel can stay at $40? Well, no, duh. That was a one-off short squeeze. But is it going to be 15 or 20? Like, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that's one of the reasons, I don't follow a lot of nickel deals. I follow FPX, and they're going to be presenting in my block on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And what I like about it, I've always liked FPX. My brother Dave, who you were good friends with, he loved this deal. It's this weird nickel iron alloy. And what they do is they mine and produce a concentrate of the alloy, and it actually has very high nickel content. It's much higher nickel content than your standard sulfide. But they're also working on a process to make nickel sulfate directly, and that's basically an input that goes directly into battery manufacturers. The market doesn't really understand how good people look at the grades of this, and it freaks them out. They kind of go like 0.13%, like what the hell? But when you look at how they can process it and how they can make these products, the actual margins on this are very good, and it's a very, very, very large deposit. I think the market's just starting to figure that one out, so I like that one a lot. Just
where is that? Where is the project, Eric? Where is the project?
It's in northern BC.
Good. Okay.
It's basically about 0.13, but they've got a billion tons, basically proven and probable. And there's another area right next to the one that's seen most of the drilling that's probably the same size or bigger. So they probably got a couple billion tons of this stuff. And like I said, those grades sound ridiculous, but really all they have to do with this stuff is a grind and magnetic separation and float it, and there you go. You have 65% nickel concentrate, which nobody else can produce. I mean,
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and these guys are not, they're not giving anybody any illusions. They spent a lot of time, you know, improving the logistics, improving the economics. That there's a way to probably make the carbon footprint on this mine very small. And there's no pretense from these guys. They're like, look, we're, you know, we're waiting for Company X to come and take us.
Okay.
That's what this is, right? It's not, they don't really want to build it.
Oh, okay. All right. I see about $214 million market cap. Does that sound right? About 83 cents, something like that? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's had a pretty big move in the last couple of days, not surprisingly.
Yeah. Yeah. Like some other things. Well, what about Vizsla Silver, Pan Global Resources? Yeah.
Yeah, Visa. I mean, I love Visa. It's a great story. They just put out a 105 million ounce silver equivalent, and the silver equivalent was virtually all silver and gold. You know, high grade resource, high 300 gram per ton stuff. All of the wireframes that resource is on, they're all wide open. There's tons of veins they haven't even touched yet. They're about to start flying an airborne survey, an EM survey that'll probably give them another 20 or 30 targets. They own it 100% outright, and that includes a 500-ton-a-day mill. All that stuff is permitted. I own a fair amount of the stock, and it's a very high, for me, it's a very high confidence holding. I mean, I'll be shocked if the stock doesn't double in the next 12 months. It's one of those. And plus, they're drilling 120,000 meters with 13 rigs, so there's just going to be news.
Wow, constantly. Wow. Oh, good. Sounds very exciting. I guess we got another minute or two yet. What about Pan Global? That's one you've talked about before.
Yeah, that's another one. That's another very high conviction one for me. Great management team. They've already probably got, I don't know, 25, 30 million tons. I mean, I'm completely pulling that number around my behind, to be honest, at La Romana. But La Romana is the first gravity target that they tested, and they're in the Iberian Pyrite Belt in Spain, and in that belt, gravity is an extremely effective tool. And the reason why that's important is they just finished getting additional property to the east and north granted about 2 months ago. That property has another 11 gravity targets on it. They just reported a hole from one of those this morning that was like, I don't know, it was like 9 meters of a percent and a half copper, but they have, you know, all of those targets have a really good shot at being something like La Romana, which they've been drilling for the last 18 months. They've got lots of cash. I don't know how many meters. I mean, they said this morning they're going to do 20,000 meters on these new targets, but I would expect that to just get expanded and expanded, and probably the rig count get expanded. If they're having success on a given target, they probably just leave the rig there and get another one for the next target. So it's another one where there's just going to be news flow.
Yeah, I see 74 cents. 74 cents, that's PGZ, $150 million market cap, more or less. So, yeah. And then another one that I follow as well, thanks to you, is Sun Summit Minerals. You want to talk about that one? 42 cents, $28 million market cap, a real low market cap.
It's a really low market cap. I mean, Buck has got a lot of gold to hunt. I mean, they've pulled a lot of long gold intercepts. It's been difficult for them to figure out how to chase this, just because it's a very, very big hydrothermal system. There's multiple pulses. So the last program they did was basically grid drilling. And even if you ask Bob Willis, he'd tell you, you know, promotionally that probably wasn't the best thing to do, but we had to do it. We needed to get a bunch of sections so we could start figuring out how the dots connect and be able to actually vector this stuff. And they've got a much better handle now. I'm hoping to do a call with Bob in about a week. He's waiting to get a bunch of graphics from the consultants in terms of, okay, this is what the grid drilling did for us. But the bottom line is they're closing a $6 million placement right about now. That's enough for them to drill another, you know, 30,000 meters probably. They've got a rig going right now. And what they're doing right now is chasing some of the higher grade stuff that they didn't chase with the grid drilling. The grid drilling was not intended to follow up on the high grade stuff. It was intended to just let them try to figure out the system. So the stuff they're drilling now, I think, is much higher probability of being kind of, you know, a boomer drill hole here and there that gets people excited. Plus, I think Buck is going to, I think when the day comes, and I don't know when it's going to be, that they do a resource, I think people are going to be surprised how many ounces are on this project. This is a big mineralized system. It's very big.
Very large and open pittable on surface, huh? I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're you don't always get the sexy holes when you're going for bulk tonnage, but Bob Bob isn't a geo, he's a mining engineer. And Bob and I are quite close friends. And Bob just says, look, you know, this is, I know people want sexy high grade, but that's not where you build the ounces. And he said, I'm a mining engineer. I wouldn't be drilling this thing if I didn't think it was going to work.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, there's some extra, really exciting stories right there, Eric, and a lot more, I'm sure, from other newsletter writers as well.
Yeah, there's a really good lineup. Really good lineup.
Good lineup, and a lot of newsletter writers there as well. So, thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us, and I'll look forward to seeing you up there in beautiful British Columbia. Thank you, Eric.
And Jay Taylor fans, I'll try not to get him too hungover this time when we go out for dinner. No problem.
No. In my old age, I don't do that anymore.
We'll see. I'm
finding it's kind of nice to be awake, you know, and alive, and I don't know. But you could when you're a lot younger, you could do things you can't do when you're 75, Eric. So you'll find out.
Overrated, Jay.
You'll find out in 20 years from now or so. You'll find out.
Yeah, right. No, I got a pretty good idea already. Don't worry.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, Eric, for being with us. All right, folks. Well, we do have to go to break, but Alistair MacLeod will be with us when we return to talk about how the Ukraine fits into our rapidly changing geopolitical landscape. We'll be right back with Alistair MacLeod.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa. Play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and as always, I'm really pleased to welcome Alistair MacLeod to the show once again. Thanks for joining us, Alistair.
That's my pleasure, Jay.
And, you know, it's really good to have you, and especially, always good to have you, but especially when markets are in turmoil like this, and your insights are always so welcome and so useful. I should tell people that every Thursday you put out an essay that's very apropos to whatever's going on in the markets, and you can go to goldmoney.com, and I guess it's I forget which sub page it is, but it's goldmoney.com, and what is it? It's specifically
hit research and then insights.
Insights, that's it. Yeah.
Okay, there. Yeah.
Very good. Anyway, it's excellent, and it's one of those things I can't do without, I feel. It's so helpful. But I'd like to talk to you about your I guess it was a February 24th article, how Ukraine fits into the global jigsaw, and then a little bit later ask you, you know, with things not turning out the way any of us were expecting pretty much, how that alters your view of things. But your article, how Ukraine fits into the global jigsaw, it was written on the eve of the Russian invasion, I believe, or just about the time that they were starting to go into the Ukraine. Then I would, you know, as I say, would like to ask you also then, the other article was when normality is exposed as a Ponzi. But in any event, in your February 24th article, you wrote, and I quote, "Ukraine is part of a far bigger geopolitical picture. Russia and China want U.S. hegemonic influence in the Eurasian continent. They want U.S. hegemony marginalized in that part of the world. And following defeats for U.S. foreign policy in Syria and Afghanistan and following Brexit, Putin is driving a wedge between America and the non-Anglo-Saxon EU. Also in that same article, you wrote, and I quote, being keenly aware that its dominant role in NATO is under threat, America has been trying to escalate the Ukraine crisis to suck Russia into an untenable occupation. Putin won't fall for it," end of quote. Well, obviously, your view and the view of most people was not correct. Putin has not only hit, I guess he's hit military installations, but not all that successfully. So he's taken on sort of a mass shelling of civilian areas, killing lots of people and maiming a lot of them. Why do you think Putin has conducted such a bloody war as he has? And do you think that his targeting of civilians will prove to have been a big mistake?
Well, I think things sort of rather got out of control. I mean, normally he's got a very measured approach to geopolitical issues, and really by sort of standing back and letting America make all the mistakes, so far he's actually done very well. I say this not in admiration of him at all, because he is a ruthless leader and has been successful by being ruthless. I mean, once America had messed up Syria, you know, which was the bridge for Hezbollah to receive arms and support from Iran, once that was all messed up, and the Americans and their if you like, vested interests in Syria were beginning to lose out and on the run, then Russia came in and really blasted Aleppo. I mean, you see pictures of the streets in Aleppo after the bombing campaign. It was entirely ruthless. I think what's happened with Ukraine is that he made the mistake of thinking he could repeat that, because the Americans are on the run. I mean, they pulled out of Afghanistan, and not only that, but there was apparently an attempted coup d'etat backed by the CIA in Azerbaijan. And, you know, they very, very quickly sent in the troops and sorted that one out. So, you know, as far as Putin is concerned, I think America is on the run. His real interest is, as you said earlier, to basically remove or diminish American interest in Western Europe. And there are two elements of this. There is the control through NATO that America exercises on military policy, if you like, for the Western Europe alliance. And also, the other thing he wanted was for NATO to move back from being so close to Russia. And, you know, these are perfectly understandable. But I think the hubris really sort of got a bit away with him. And this is where all us armchair commentators got it wrong. He then walked into first of all you know, the Donbass and around the sort of eastern end, recognizing them, and the next thing we know, his troops were mobilized, and But we knew before this happened that it was a stupid thing to do, because the only way you could invade eastern Ukraine is in a sharp winter when the ground is frozen. Otherwise, mm-hmm. your tanks just get bogged down. And that basically mm-hmm. is what has happened, because mm-hmm. he's been restricted to, main tarred roads. Any time they've sort of gone off, as it were, the whole thing has just sort of fallen apart. And, of course, he's had to contend with what is, in essence, is a guerrilla war. So it's the first really big geopolitical mistake that Putin has made. And I think we should note that we have now put him into a corner. And when you put a bear into a corner, watch mm-hmm. out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's scary. And of course, they did mention that they were, getting ready with their nuclear weapons if we do anything untoward from their point of view. A lot has been made, Alistair, at least in our propaganda campaign here, that NATO has been united like never before. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's right. I mean, this is one of the losses that Putin has inflicted upon himself. Before then, NATO was very much divided, with the Europeans quite happy to let the Americans take the lead and spend all the money. And, they sit back and say, well, we can't do this, we can't do that. But by invading the Ukraine and creating a refugee crisis with, and I'm sorry to put it like this, but, white people mm-hmm. like us in Western Europe on the receiving end of this, it has had the effect of completely uniting NATO. And, so big, big mistake. But as I say, the reason I would be worried about this is that the real war always has been a financial war, and to that we can now add a commodity war. And there are so many illusions about Russia in the West. I mean, one is that the economy is weak. It's not weak,
yes,
actually.
Yes.
They don't depend on imports from the West, so cutting them off, all that achieves is it puts up exchange controls instead of the Central Bank of Russia having to do it. It won't be very long before the ruble steadies. But there are aspects of this which I think are blowing back badly. The commodity side, I mean, particularly when it comes to energy, I would not be surprised to see Putin now really begin to turn the screws on natural gas supplies and oil supplies into Western Europe. So we're going to see prices, I think, energy prices continue to rise. And of course, with all the money printing that's been going on in recent years, and undoubtedly the response from Western nations that they will continue to print money to pay for higher prices, these prices are just going to go up and up and up.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, we're talking about tightening here, 25 basis points, and supposedly that's the Fed is going to go through with that this month sometime. And we're already having a weakening economy here, and it's just hard to see how far they can take that. I mean, is there any way the Fed can go, but when things really start breaking down, and they could break down any time, I would think, and I know that you keep track of the situation. The European banks, are in some difficulty, perhaps, if I read you right. It's just hard to see how they won't open the money spigots again and just blast, trillions more dollars into the system, right? Can't you pretty much count on that?
Yeah, you're right. It is pretty much inevitable. When it comes to interest rates, I mean, there was a general consensus that the next hike would actually be 50 basis points, and that's been rowed back to expectations 25. Of 25 basis points. So we have this situation where, in a sense, I think there is relief at the Fed that there are signs that the economy actually is slowing. So they feel that they won't need to push up interest rates. But this is just completely wrong, because they don't understand what interest rates are. Interest rates mm-hmm. are not the price of money, which is what the Keynesians think.
Yes,
interest
yes.
rates reflect the depreciation, the expected depreciation of the purchasing power of the currency. And I mean, quite simply, and I know we've discussed this on your show before, with inflation running at over 7% on the CPI, and with independent analysts saying it's probably double that, and I'm referring to John Williams at Shadow Stats, who I know you have on your show sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there is no doubt about it. We have got record negative yields. Mm-hmm. This cannot continue for long. The Fed can do what it likes, trying to sort of say, well, you know, we're not going to raise interest rates because the outlook is dismal. But the fact of the matter is that markets will do it for them. And that is the big danger that we face. The basis of valuation for bonds, and as a consequence of that, the valuation basis for equities, that is going to start turning very negative. And we've begun to see an erosion of the bull market. I mean, you could argue that it is already over, but you know, it's the interest rate outlook. The markets will take control of interest rates. They will go considerably higher, and there is nothing the Fed or the Bank of England or the ECB or the Bank of Japan can do about it.
Yeah, and as you point out, that is having an impact on the balance sheets of a lot of different central banks, and that the central banks themselves may be coming insolvent.
I mean, the problem the central banks have is that in the bad old days before quantitative easing, if I put it that way, their balance sheets were relatively clean. But now, of course, they've turned into huge, great investment trusts holding predominantly bonds. The Bank of Japan mm-hmm. has also got equities, and so has the Swiss National Bank. But so when you get rising yields, guess what? The prices go down, and mm-hmm. Central banks suddenly are in negative equity. In other words, their liabilities exceed their assets. So they need refinancing. And, you know, how embarrassing is that?
Well, all they can do then, since the only thing they know to do is to create more money out of thin air, more units of currency or whatever, right?
Well, except the problem there is that as they do that, they
more debt.
The currencies even more. I mean, they've really got themselves into, you know, an enormous stew over this. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually writing the next article, which will be published on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I explain how they will try and resolve this. But the big difference, I mean, these things have happened before. The Bank of England has got itself into difficulties back in 1697. And that was resolved by basically a recapitalization provided by the Treasury and financed out of credit, believe it or not. They can do the same again. But the difference is that back then we had what was called specie. In other words, we were on a silver standard. And the problem that the bank had was it had a run. Its notes were being cashed in for silver. The silver standard continued. The bank was recapitalized to manage it. We now have a situation where there is pure fiat currency. So goodness knows what happens when these banks recapitalize themselves.
You make a point that you know, these sanctions are really not going to do much longer term. As you say, Russia doesn't import that much from us. That we depend tremendously on oil and energy. Europe does especially. And so, you know, you point that Russia can turn to China, and they are. And I think already with these restrictions that are being placed on sanctions and so forth, that they have already some arrangement for credit cards from the Chinese, if I'm not wrong. This is going to draw China and Russia closer together. I think there's no doubt about that, is there? And how can those two countries work together? Because they have been working increasingly together. I think you point out in your article that China can buy Russia's oil, although they don't have the capacity to send as much to China as they can to Europe, right?
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about how Russia and China can work together. And then I'd like you also to talk a little bit about Russia's economy and how, you know, most Americans, as you said, we think that Russia's weak. But actually, if you look at their balance sheet of their central bank compared to our 130% of debt to GDP, they're something like 20%, I think you pointed out.
Yeah.
They have a 13% flat tax. My goodness, would I love to have a 13% flat tax.
Exactly.
They have limited regulations, you say.
Right? Yeah. It's likely regulated flat tax of 13% and government debt to GDP of only 20%. I mean, you know, this is a libertarian's dream, actually.
Yeah.
The problem, I think, is that it's not really recorded properly when you look at things like GDP and so on. And if you look at GDP, I mean, that basically is a reflection of the amount of fiat currency being pushed into the economy.
Right.
So, you know, commentators who don't understand this think that, you know, the figures coming out of Russia reflect a stagnant economy. It doesn't at all, because, you know, the money is, put it this way, the money is being used better there than it is in the Western equivalents.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese relationship, if I can just go back to that a little bit, I think this was best summed up by the official news agent, which is obviously a government feed. They stated that they're not allies of Russia, which basically means that they won't support Russia in the, let's say, in the United Nations resolutions and things like that. They will just abstain. But they are partners of Russia, which basically means that they will work together with Russia when it comes to commercial interests, when it comes to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, when it comes to things like, you know, the you know, sort of bank, interbank messaging, you know, the sort of the equivalent of SWIFT. All these things, China will work with Russia. And importantly, China will work with Russia with respect to gold. So, you know, I really think that it's virtually impossible for the West to run a tight ship in terms of sanctions, because, you know, China is an enormous economy through which these things can leak. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to oil, I mean, it's quite simple. It will take time to get the volumes diverted from places like Europe round to China, because they don't have the pipe network that they have going into Western Europe. And not only that, but, you know, if it goes round by sea, it's got to go all the way around the Cape of Good Hope, because they won't let the Russian tankers through. So, it's, you know, so we're talking about a trip of about, you know, 35 days, I guess, from the Baltic getting round there. So, you know, there is a delay on this. But, you know, do Russia care? I mean, what's happened is that they don't really need to sell the oil, because they've got a fundamentally sound economy. And the oil that they do sell, it's just getting a higher and higher price. And it's in their interest to push the prices up as much as possible. You know, they've now got control over energy prices, being the largest exporter of energy in the world. And also, they've got control over various key commodities. I mean, we saw, for example, the price of nickel spiking up hugely on a short squeeze. Palladium was another one. I mean, that just absolutely rocketed up the other day. And so this is something, I think it could well affect silver. I think silver more than gold, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a very, very interesting time for a number of commodities where there isn't much stock around. I mean, and metals have been in backwardation for months, which basically means that there is a shortage for immediate delivery.
Right.
You know, what a time for the West to turn around and tell Russia, we don't want any of your commodities. So, you know, go away. I mean, for goodness sake,
it's a
stupid thing we could do. But anyway, that's politics.
Well, I think, it's politics. It's what, you know, what gets them voted, what gets them votes, I guess, but you talked a little bit about how this could sort of lead to a ruble backed by gold. Could you just talk about that a little bit with about 3 minutes left?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is a little bit sort of jumping the gun a bit, but
sure.
Just note that because we have turned around and said to Russia, right, you know, your currency reserves are worthless, with the exception of obviously their holdings in Chinese yuan, but they've got a lot of euros in particular. They've got less dollars. So, you know, the Russian central bank is sitting there on something like $500 million equivalent of foreign currency, which is absolutely useless. What's the message from that? The message from that is don't hold foreign currencies. If you're going to have anything in your reserves, make it gold. And I think that the easiest way for the Russian Central Bank to stabilize its currency, if it needs to do so, is actually add to its gold position and somehow get perhaps into the market a view that the ruble is backed by gold. They may have to, indeed have to do that. If I was doing it, what I would do is I would ramp up the price of gold in Western markets through China and other Asian markets, and I would get it to a level where I would want to fix the ruble to it and have a coin exchange facility, if you like, so that individuals could submit their rubles to the central bank in return for gold coin. That is, you know, probably something that will be a little bit down the road, but the more we get the feeling that this sort of thing is likely to happen, the more it's going to erode confidence in fiat currencies, which have no backing whatsoever. And guess what? The American Fed and the US Treasury in particular have spent the last 50 years from when Nixon took the dollar off the last tiny vestige, the fig leaf of a gold standard. They've been damning gold and saying it's not money. The dollar is, and consequently, nobody is prepared emotionally, mentally, or any understanding of what true money is. Right. They're not prepared for this at all. So the effect, I think, actually could be really quite catastrophic for the West.
Well, we've seen. Gold was up some $72 around lunchtime, 12 o'clock today, noon. It got taken down quite a bit, but it's still up. I don't know. I haven't seen it since we started went on the show, but $30-$40 or so. Do you think these current events are having anything to do with that?
Indeed. I mean, absolutely. It's currently trading at 20.52. So This is, it's on the way back up. And I don't think there's any stock in the market. I mean, there really isn't. And I think that's particularly the case of silver. I mean, if you look at the way silver has performed, it really feels like a real squeeze on the establishment. And I think I would hesitate to say that we could have another sort of nickel spike on silver, but it's got the makings of, you know, the same sort of dynamics behind driving the price. There is no silver available, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is used in industry too, and the green deals. You know, the people that want to go green, they need silver and copper and all these metals. And anyway, we'll have to leave it go at that. Alistair, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for your insights. Always so valuable. And we'll just hang on to your gold. I guess that's the message.
I think so.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for having me on.
You're welcome. Thanks for being with us. All right, folks, that is it for this week. Next week, Kevin Duffy of the Coffee Can Portfolio Newsletter will be with me, and Michael Oliver, as well as Quentin Henning, will join me to talk about an update on the evolving world-class silver tin deposit in Bolivia that is owned by El Oro, one of the sponsors of this show. Should be a great show, so I hope you'll join me. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.